The terrorists never knew what hit them. By the time the first SEALs swarmed over the stern from their fast stab craft in the wee hours of the morning, they'd beat the Royal Dutch Commandos by half an hour. The hijackers were all being guarded by Garin's highly professional security team in the cruise liner's ballroom. Garin had communicated with the rescuers in advance, using the ship's radio telephone. Captain Nygaard, who had started the rescue rolling by surreptitiously pressing a concealed panic transmission button when the masked men burst onto the bridge, was very cooperative. One of Garin's bodyguards, himself a former Royal Marine commando, had dropped the hijacker aiming at the captain's austere silver-haired head with a headshot of his own. Garin's call had prevented any unpleasant incidents. Under normal conditions, a counter-terror team hitting a hostage situation would automatically kill anyone they saw holding a weapon. Anya had captured several hijackers. She hadn't had to kill any more. Having a beautiful woman wearing a bloody and not very substantial evening gown burst in and aim an assault rifle at them got their attention, especially since the rattle of gunfire hinted how very far wrong things had gone for them. The presence of almost a score of far more professional armed thugs in the midst of their intended victims had taken the hijackers utterly by surprise. They'd obviously expected the cruise liner to be a soft, undefended target. Civilian vessels usually were. The total butcher's bill had been 9 hijackers killed, 3 wounded. Almost 20 more had been taken prisoner. One of Garin's men had been wounded slightly, when a mettlesome but overwrought female passenger, believing him to be a hijacker despite his evening dress and lack of a ski mask, nailed him above the right eye with the spike heel of her shoe. Anya knew those things were dangerous. Once the ship was rescued, Garin explained that the Americans were coming because they had the closest operational team available. The Dutch were sending men because the ship was in their territorial waters, and the UK was getting an oar in because so many of its nationals were on board the Ocean Venture, and it's still like to imagine the Caribbean belonged to the Royal Navy. Anya and Garin returned to their cabins to change out of their incriminatingly bloody clothes. En route, Anya wiped down her AKM and magazines for fingerprints and hid them in a broom closet. She showered and then had a fit of the shakes. Now, Anya fully expected to spend hours being grilled by spooks and operators from half the nations of the Earth. Garin burst into Anya's stateroom without knocking, as usual.
We're clear to go, Anya.
What?
I pulled some strings. Amazing what's available to be pulled when one is CEO of one of the world's largest oil companies. I could get used to it.
You talked our way out of interrogation? What did you do, bribe the SEALs, the Royal Navy, all of the Netherlands?
None of the above. It's always easier and cheaper to bribe the media. Don't just sit there, start packing your things.
Why are they letting us go, Garin?
I told them something far more compelling to their minds than mere truth. I told them what they wanted to hear.
Steam wisped from Anya's mug of hot chocolate as she emerged from the small but well-organized kitchen of her Brooklyn loft. She wore a dark purple sports bra and white terry shorts. Despite the air conditioning holding the flat summer day's heat at bay, her skin was sheened with sweat from her morning workout. Finding a spot at one end of her sofa that was clear of books and manuscripts, she plopped down. She picked up the remote from the coffee table. Its glass top was also loaded down with artifacts, magazines, and stacks of printouts.
Violent takeover was
one of the cable news channels came up. The modest widescreen set showed a long, gleaming white ship shot from above. Helicopters swarmed around it, including the shark shapes of gunships. Boats of various sizes surrounded the huge luxury vessel.
Time by the multinational task force that answered the distress call. We have no new information as to the identity of the terrorists or what their purpose was in descending on the Ocean Venture.
Anya muted the sound. It wasn't as if they were going to tell her anything she didn't already know. The media, courtesy of Garin's bribes or not, were asserting that the would-be hijackers had fallen for a multinational sting operation designed to trap modern-day pirates of the Caribbean. It wasn't as far-fetched as it sounded. On the flight to Curaçao, Garin explained what a huge problem piracy was worldwide, although largely unreported even by the sensation-hungry news media. She could also see how the nations of the multinational anti-piracy task force would be more than happy to take credit for what they believed had been accomplished purely by Garin's security team. They couldn't be happier than Anya. She'd spent way too many uncomfortable hours answering pointed questions from sweaty men in uniforms. For their part, the People's Revolutionary Terrorists had reportedly confessed to being pure pirates, interested only in looting the wealthy passengers and gouging a vast hush payment out of the cruise lines to get their ship back. She knew not to take anything in the news at face value. She'd seen what really happened far too often. But she suspected that much was straight. At least Garin seemed to be done with her semi-coerced services as escort. That was a relief, too. She hadn't really been able to enjoy the cruise anyway. To what extent Garin would consider she had returned his favor was an open question. But then, so was Garin. She didn't know anything where Garin was concerned, except that their destinies were entwined, and going to stay that way as long as she carried the sword. The TV switched to show a man with one of those boyish-gone, middle-aged, hard-case faces under a crew cut the color of a steam iron. The screen identified him as spokesman for the Cruise Line International Association. She guessed he was about to very earnestly and with great sincerity lie across his bow tie about how the cruise lines would never, ever pay hush money to terrorists. She'd had enough. Anya picked up a recent copy of the Journal of Forbidden Archaeology. Thumbing to an article on crystal skulls, she began to read.
Girlfriend, I don't see how you managed to eat that much and stay that slim.
Clarice Hartung leaned forward over the table at Anya as she chewed the mouthful she had bitten out of the specialty of the house, a prime rib sandwich, blood rare, on toasted sourdough with just a touch of horseradish, and shrugged.
Well, I mostly seem to have trouble keeping weight on.
Clarice shook her head in mock despair. She was a production assistant on Chasing History's Monsters. She had milk chocolate skin, a cloud of reddish-brown hair that was more curly than frizzy, big dark brown eyes, and a wide smile.
I'd kill for a problem like that.
You look great.
For a full-figured woman, you mean?
No, seriously.
It's the starch.
Say what?
Your problem is the amount of starch you eat.
Mindy Llewellyn was a somewhat hyper young woman, with ash blonde hair hanging straight to frame a gamine face with big blue eyes. She did makeup for several shows, including Chasing History's Monsters. The closest thing Anya had to real friends on the show, the pair had prevailed on her to accompany them to Corrigan's, an Irish pub near the studios.
Girl, I don't even want to be as thin as you. You look like a toothpick. Sometimes I'm a little worried for your health.
I never seem to have much appetite. But if you're really concerned about your weight, you want to stop obsessing on fat and start looking at the amount of starch you eat. Take those fat-free yogurts you're always snacking on. Have you looked at their contents?
Hey, they're healthy.
Are they? They have the same amount of calories as the normal full-fat yogurt. What they replace the fat with is starch.
But carbohydrates are brain food.
If you sit on your brains, some are okay, but starches go straight to your blood sugar and your hips, like that roll and the croutons.
Are you trying to rob me of my simple pleasures in life?
I'm just saying.
Well, the truth is, I worry about our Anya spending too many nights alone on her couch with museum samples and moldy manuscripts. You're going to turn into a mummy girl and not the kind that goes with a daddy.
Too bad the only bones you're handling are long dead. I can't believe I said that.
Thanks so much for your votes of confidence. You sure know how to give a woman confidence in her own sexuality.
Oh, you've got loads of sexuality, Anya. Men throw themselves at you like moths at a flame, and you swat them like moths.
I think it's more like they smash their little antennaed moth heads in against the glass wall of her apparent indifference.
I am not indifferent.
You are right. The word is oblivious.
Good one!
I'm so glad we had this time together.
Oh, don't take it so hard, Anya. We tease you because we love you.
And we wish you'd give some nice man a chance to.
Anya had given some a chance, but they had a tendency to not stick around. or to die. But she couldn't tell her friends that. Even though their well-intentioned teasing was like sticking a knife in an open wound.
What you need, Anya, is a nice, rich oil sultan. Ha! But not one of the religious fanatic ones. Or a fat one with oily skin and too many rings. Ooh. A handsome, dashing, young sultan.
Right. And they exist where?
You've been playing Prince of Persia on your PlayStation 2 again, Mindy?
All right, how about just a billionaire? I mean, a nice young billionaire. I'm not talking Donald Trump orange comb over here.
If you just believed in yourself, you could catch one. Get him to take you on a nice cruise. What is it, Anya? You look like you've seen a ghost.
That's one way to look at it.
All right. Be that way.
She will, Clarice. She always is.